Hey guys, a quick update for all my favorite true crime fans. I know how annoying commercials can be when you're getting into an episode, so I'm going to start releasing ad-free episodes on my Patreon each week. I will leave the promos in for other true crime podcasts that I think you'll like, mostly because I know that's usually how I find my next favorite series to binge. You can find The Last Trip at patreon.com/thelasttrippodcast. It's only $4 a month, and you'll also get more info about the cases, photos, and we can get to know each other. On that note, I'd like to thank our newest member, Sydney Davies. Thank you for your support, Sydney. Another awesome way to support the show is to subscribe, leave a review, and rate the show 5 stars. I love reading your reviews and really appreciate it when you leave me one. Also, if there are any stories you'd like me to cover, have any questions, or just want to say hi, you can email me at lasttrippodcast@gmail.com. Or you can find me on Instagram at thelasttripcrimepod, or my personal Instagram at feathergirl77. Thank you all so much for listening, and I really appreciate the support. Now let's jump into our episode. Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please make sure the volume of this podcast is set perfectly to your listening enjoyment. Please take your seat, whether that's on the treadmill, car, sofa, or bed, and buckle in for the last trip. My name is Jamie Beebe, and I'll be your tour guide, recreating someone's last days in paradise. On behalf of myself and everyone behind the scenes, please enjoy the Last Trip podcast. And because nobody likes a long flight to get to where they want to be, let's prepare for takeoff. Elliot Blair was just 33 years old when he and his wife Kim went to Rosarito to celebrate their one-year wedding anniversary. But after the couple went to sleep in their hotel room on January 13th, 2023, Elliot was found dead just a couple hours later. Does this story sound familiar? That's because it's very similar to episode 4 about Elijah Snow, who is also celebrating his wedding anniversary in Cancun. After going to sleep one night, his wife woke up and Elijah was gone, only to be found dead a couple hours later. The biggest similarity in both cases is that their families feel their loved one was murdered, covered up by Mexican authorities, and neither have gotten justice. Being that Rosarito is only about a 3-hour drive from Los Angeles, depending on traffic, I've spent a lot of time there. And although I love going there for the convenience, it is a place with very high crime and violence. Most of the border towns along Mexico and the United States have a higher violent crime rate, and Rosarito is no exception. If you're looking for somewhere safer, but just as close, you can drive a little further in and go to Mexican wine country. But there is a lot to do in Rosarito, so I don't want to steer you away from the experience. Rosarito started out as a small fishing village along the Baja California coast. The climate is similar to Los Angeles, and the beaches are pretty nice, although the water is cold. During the Prohibition era of the 1920s and 30s, American tourists looking for alcohol, gambling, and entertainment started making their way to the village to have a good time and partake in everything that was illegal in the U.S. In the 1950s and 60s, Hollywood filmmakers realized that not only was it a beautiful place to film movies, but it was also much cheaper to shoot there than it was in Los Angeles. In fact, the movies Titanic and Pearl Harbor were partially filmed there. This brought a lot of attention to the area and the subsequent tourism boom of the late 20th century. This is when they developed more luxury resorts, restaurants, bars, and entertainment to cater to their new revenue source of tourism. And tourism has kept steady throughout the years, even though almost everyone I know has had a scary story about a time they were in Rosarito. I went once with my ex-boyfriend who, if you've been listening to this podcast, you know he wasn't really a good guy. We went for New Year's Eve one year, and it was a complete disaster. While we were at a bar celebrating the countdown, my phone was somehow stolen, along with all the money I had in my pocket. The next day, we were walking down the main street, and my ex was smoking a joint, which is illegal in Rosarito, and we walked past some policemen on motorcycles. My ex threw the joint down, but it was too late. They approached us and told us they were going to take us to jail. Of course, I was terrified. But my ex offered to bribe them, and after taking all of our cash, they eventually let us walk away. Police bribery is a real thing in this area. And if you're approached by them, I suggest you give them what they want and walk away. But we'll get more into that when we cover the safety portion of this episode. There are a lot of amazing things to see and do in Rosarito. If you're a movie history buff, you can visit the main set of the epic Titanic movie. It was built in 1996 on 46 acres and more than 3,000 feet of oceanfront overlooking the Pacific. After that film, the area was also used for films like Tomorrow Never Dies and Pearl Harbor. 20th Century Fox later sold the studios to a group of local businessmen who continue to rent it out to streaming companies like Netflix. While the actual studios are closed, you can still go and visit, and it's pretty cool. I've walked through it with no problems. Close to the film set is Castillo de Diablo, translated to the Devil's Castle. It is totally bizarre and awesome. This guy Tony Wells from California built the castle, spending millions on statues, vintage furniture, coffins, chandeliers, and creepy mannequins. And then the house became kind of a mecca for devil worshippers, and tourists started standing outside taking photos, which eventually led to Tony charging a small fee to come inside and see all his treasures. It's worth a stop, and it's along the main road, so it's not out of the way. Another of my favorite attractions is Christ of the Sacred Heart, a 75-foot-tall statue of Jesus on the very top of the highest hill, displaying his Sacred Heart about 6 miles south of Rosarito. And you can see it from just about anywhere in town, especially the main highway. It was built in 2006 and is the only large statue of Jesus in the world that is in full color. All the others are monochromatic or white. It's a well-known landmark, and if you've been to Rosarito, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you're in Rosarito, I suggest staying at the Rosarito Beach Hotel. Not because it's the best hotel. I've stayed there a few times, and it's mostly dirty, the decor is outdated, the beds are uncomfortable, and it's overpriced. But it's a big part of Rosarito history and walking distance to everything. It was built in 1925, and during the 30s and 40s, it was the spot for all the Hollywood celebrities. Known as a glamorous Hollywood getaway, it's a cultural icon and has been featured in numerous TV shows, films, and magazines. And of course, it's known to be haunted. One story is of the ghost of a young woman named Adelaida, who reportedly died under mysterious circumstances at the hotel in the 1920s. And according to legend, her spirit roams the halls of the hotel, searching for her lost lover or seeking justice for her untimely death. The hotel has a great reputation for paranormal activity, so if you're into that, give it a whirl. One of my favorite spots to visit just outside of Rosarito in Ensenada is La Bufadora. It's basically a giant blowhole and one of the largest in North America. The blowhole itself is a large sea cave that was carved out by the relentless pounding of ocean waves. And now when the waves crash into the cave, the water is forced through an opening in the rock and it sprays out. It's fun for the whole family, and the area around it has become a huge tourist attraction with shopping and food. There's plenty to do, like enjoying the beach with drinks and food. Always try the fish tacos in Rosarito because they're some of the best I've tried anywhere in the world. You can go paragliding, off-roading on ATVs, horseback riding, or hit the bars. Drinking is one of the main activities in Rosarito, and I'd recommend the infamous Papas and Beer. It's a huge nightclub, literally the size of a city block, with over 7 multi-level indoor and outdoor bars, a pool, and a stage for music. It's a huge party any night of the week with drugs, drinking, and dancing. And don't worry, it's easy to find. If you're walking around town, people will constantly come up to you and try to sell you a wristband to get in. But if you want to go, I'd advise getting the wristband at the door or buying tickets online, just to be on the safe side. You'll pay anywhere from $20 to $100 to get in, depending on the night's entertainment, and you only have to be 18 years old. Just be careful, because with all the drinking, it's a great place for criminals to hang out too. There's theft, sexual assaults, drink spiking, and fighting. My advice, if you want to go, don't drink much, stay aware, and don't go alone. Elliot and Kimberly spent a lot of time in Rosarito together, and they loved the area. They would have never expected that one of their best visits would end so tragically. Elliot Blair was born July 18, 1989, to Tom and Stella Blair in Long Beach, California. And he was a true California kid. He loved the outdoors and going on adventures. He spent time off-roading, dirt biking, and camping in the desert. He loved the ocean, the beaches, and any water sport he could try. He was close to his family, and as a kid, he spent time rebuilding a 1966 blue Baja Volkswagen Bug with his dad. His sister Candace was 15 years older than him and often felt like a second mom. She would drive him around to sports practices or tutoring classes in her own Volkswagen Bug. And as a child, he'd sit in the front seat with her and pretend to shift the car's gears until his dad taught him how to drive. Elliot attended Servite High School in Anaheim, where he played soccer and was popular with all his friends. A life-changing moment occurred for him in high school when he sat in on a presentation given by Case Barnett, a public defender at the Orange County Public Defender's Office at the time. And that's when Elliot knew he wanted to be a public defender and wasn't going to let anything stop him. After high school, he enrolled at California State University in Fullerton and received a Bachelor of Arts degree in economics. Following graduation, he attended Loyola Law School in Los Angeles, where he earned his Juris Doctor degree and successfully completed a concentration in criminal justice with honors. He was an intern at Orange County Public Defender's Office in 2013, the summer of his first year in law school, when he met the love of his life, Kimberly Williams. Elliot was head over heels for her, and when they began dating, they both knew it would be forever. In 2017, he got his dream job and became a deputy public defender with the Orange County Defender's Office. Kimberly was also hired as a deputy public defender at the same office, and the two were inseparable. She later said she got to see him grow into his passion for helping the disadvantaged, and that he was the most passionate about helping juvenile clients. They were married on January 15, 2022, at Wilson Creek Winery in Temecula, California, after 8 years together. Soon after their honeymoon, they bought their dream home in Orange, California, with plans to start a family. Elliot was a wonderful and kind man. He was extremely passionate about his work and spent many weekends talking to clients and working on their cases. It was more than just a job to him. He connected most with his clients in the juvenile justice system, spending extra time to mentor and encourage them. He had a bright future ahead of him, and although his main focus was work, he had a lot of talents, hobbies, and other passions. He was totally an adventurer and loved new challenges. He traveled often, especially to Mexico, and was fluent in Spanish. He told people it was his safe haven and his happy place. He loved it there so much that he proposed there, had his bachelor party there, his honeymoon, and ultimately, his last trip. He was the type of guy that could focus on almost anything and master it in no time. He was a skilled mechanic, a great cook, especially the art of barbecuing and pizza making. He was a talented musician, playing guitar and singing a song for Kimberly on their wedding day. Elliot's father, Tom, died in 2020, and it was a deep loss to the family. His mother had a hard time with the grief, but Elliot was there to help her get through it. He was known to be kind and help anyone who needed it. His smile was radiant and warmed the hearts of every person he came in contact with. And he had an innate ability to connect with people from all walks of life. He was a loving husband, son, and brother. His tragic death left his family and community with a huge hole in their hearts that will never be repaired. But was his death an accident or murder? Let's unpack the details of his last trip after a word from our sponsors. Have you ever wanted some true crime besties? Because I found mine. Stephanie and Olivia from the popular True Crime Society social media accounts are ready to tap in as your true crime besties to guide you through the latest cases taking the internet by storm. And why are they so awesome? Because the True Crime Society podcast covers everything true crime, from missing people and cold cases to the latest breaking news. Make them your go-to for everything true crime. Hosts Olivia and Stephanie bonded over their interest in true crime and created an online community of over 250,000 true crime enthusiasts who demanded a podcast. So they gave the people what they wanted. With Olivia based in Sydney and Stephanie in New York, they give you the unique global perspective you've been looking for. Listening in feels like you're chatting with your friends about whatever the latest case is. The episodes are well-researched, with just the right amount of banter, and never feel too heavy. New episodes are released every Thursday and are available on your favorite podcast app right now. So go ahead and binge. Trust me, you'll love it. Be sure to search for and subscribe to the True Crime Society podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. As Elliot and Kim's one-year anniversary approached, it was only fitting for them to go to their favorite place to celebrate, Las Rocas Resort in Rosarito, Mexico. They even booked their favorite room, 308, for their special occasion. Las Rocas is a luxury beachfront resort where every room has a breathtaking oceanfront setting. The rooms all have a private balcony or terrace. There's a restaurant and bar with craft beer on tap, a full-service holistic spa, and infinity pools on the cliff overlooking the ocean. It's right next to Puerto Nuevo Lobster Village, one of my favorite places to eat. It's a tiny fishing village where they catch fresh seafood right in front of the restaurant and serve it up. It really doesn't get more fresh than that. There are quite a few one-star reviews for this luxury resort. Other than the normal complaints of rooms being dirty, overpriced, broken Wi-Fi, or no hot water, many of the reviews were about the police pulling people over close to the property and being forced to pay or go to jail. Some people complained about their rooms being robbed while they were out or sleeping. And unfortunately, those aren't unusual complaints for this part of Mexico, no matter how luxurious the hotel says it is. But Kim and Elliot had been there many times before, and this was their favorite spot. They'd never had any problems. January 13th, 2023 was a magical day for the couple. They ate breakfast near the water, got a couple's massage, ate lobster, and watched the sunset over the waves. They had dinner at the Splash Baja Bar and Restaurant at about 7 p.m. The restaurant is well known in the area for its authentic Baja cuisine and experience, including live music on the weekends. Other than a few food poisoning complaints here and there, the reviews are pretty good. While driving back to the hotel from the Splash Bar, they were pulled over by two local Rosarito police officers. The officers said they rolled through a stop sign. But in true Rosarito fashion, the couple could pay the officers to make it all go away. But Kim and Elliot didn't have enough cash on them and said no. The officers asked where they were staying and what they were in town for. Elliot showed the police his public defender's badge and told them they were American attorneys and would only pay by credit card at the police station and they'd want a receipt. That kind of thing doesn't go over well when the cops are doing a shakedown, and they demanded the cash anyway. Eventually, Kim and Elliot relented and emptied their wallets of the $160 they had between them, and they were let go. This rattled Kim, especially because they'd never been pulled over before or had anything like that happen. But they were also thankful that nothing worse happened, and they decided to put it behind them and enjoy the rest of their vacation. They made it back to their hotel, had a few drinks in the bar, did a little dancing, and some karaoke to round out the night. During the evening and night, Elliot had approximately 5 to 6 drinks, with his last one being at about 11:30. And that's important to keep in mind. They were back in their room around 11:45, ready to retire for the night. Kim got into bed and, by all accounts, fell asleep quickly, while Elliot got into the shower to rinse off first. About 2 hours later, Kim heard, "Excuse me, miss, excuse me, is this your boyfriend down here?" She woke up confused from a deep sleep to find the security guard and hotel manager in her room trying to wake her up. She turned over, expecting to see her husband in bed with her, but the bed was empty, and that's when she realized what they were saying. She ran out of the room in her pajamas and bare feet, looking to where the security guard was pointing. That's when she saw Elliot on the ground below. She immediately screamed and ran to him, yelling at hotel security to call an ambulance. That's when they told her the ambulance came an hour ago and Elliot was already dead. Kim stayed there with her husband until the police came. Although the paramedics already reported that Elliot died from an accidental fall and there were no signs of foul play. The police questioned her at the scene, but she was never and has never been considered a suspect. At one point, a plainclothes police detective who was wearing a badge told Kim that Elliot had a bullet wound in his head, but they also tried to tell her it was an accident or a suicide. In fact, they told her one story after another about what happened, and none of it made sense. As the timeline of events started coming together, Kim was convinced Elliot was murdered. Elliot was in the shower when Kim fell asleep, but at some point, he finished his shower and put on his underwear, sleeping shirt, and socks. There were no signs of a struggle inside the hotel room, and Kim didn't wake up or hear any noises. Records show Elliot watched an Instagram video at 12:35 a.m. After that, he left the room for some unknown reason. The authorities said he left to shoo some pigeons away from the door. But that doesn't make sense because pigeons aren't active at night unless they're disturbed. And if they were disturbed, then it's because someone else was outside the room that night. Kim couldn't see a reason Elliot would leave the room without his pants on because he wasn't the type of person to just walk around like that. I didn't know Elliot, but I agree that he'd put his pants on because the average temperature at night in January in Rosarito is only about 50 degrees. That's pretty cold. Not the weather where you'd walk around half-dressed. Because they had stayed there quite a few times before, and in fact stayed in that exact room, Elliot was familiar with the layout of the resort, including the hallways and walkway. But police said after leaving the room, he allegedly fell from the open-air walkway located just outside the front door. At 12:50 a.m., just 15 minutes after he watched the Instagram video, there was a 911 call from hotel staff at the resort saying someone apparently suffered a fall. What we don't know is what happened in that crucial 15 minutes. Paramedics arrived at 1:07 a.m., concluded Elliot had no vital signs, and was dead. They left only 10 minutes later, at 1:17 a.m. Around 2 a.m., the hotel security and manager went to Kim's room to wake her up. We know from the very beginning, Mexican authorities told one story after another. After they conducted the autopsy, they said Elliot was drunk and accidentally fell off the open-air balcony. But there are some problems with that theory. Because although they said he was quote-unquote considerably drunk, his blood alcohol level was 0.1, which is only 0.02 points higher than the legal driving limit for California. Kim said he didn't show any signs of being drunk or even unsteady on his feet, and definitely not so drunk that he'd leave the room undressed and fall over the balcony. In fact, Kim said that in the 9 years she knew him, she'd never seen him sloppy, unable to stand or walk, or care for himself after drinking. Mexican authorities said his injuries were consistent with the fall, but he only fell from about 20 to 25 feet. And his injuries were much more extensive than a fall from that height. Several experts said it's likely he'd live from a fall at that height. Kimberly wanted to get Elliot back to the United States right away to do a second autopsy. But first she had to fight with authorities not to cremate his body before bringing it home. In the end, they embalmed his body without her consent, losing precious evidence. When his body was finally returned to the United States at the end of January, the second autopsy was performed in Los Angeles. Info from the second autopsy and photos from the first, which I'll post on my Patreon, concluded that Elliot sustained 40 fractures to the back of his skull, a road rash on his knees, a toe injury which indicates he was dragged, and a large black mark on his forearm that could have been a defensive wound. Elliot was found on his right side with his face down, not in the back of his skull where his injuries were. So that's one reason it's unlikely he got those injuries from the fall. His injuries were consistent with aggravated homicide. They determined it was more likely he was struck in the back of the head prior to any fall to the ground, and that he likely fell while in an unconscious state because he wasn't in any position that would protect his body. Kim believes the evidence suggests he may have been attacked by more than one person. But Mexican authorities didn't agree with the new findings. Baja Attorney General Ricardo Ivan Carpio Sanchez called Elliot's death a terrible case and said an autopsy conducted by the state's forensic medical service ruled that he died of a traumatic brain injury from the fall. The Blair family has been unable to get any other answers from Mexico and don't even know if the case is still open there. All Mexican authorities will say is that it was an unfortunate accident. When the Blair family went to the United States authorities to ask for help, they learned that the U.S. is mostly hands-off in cases like this, saying, when a U.S. citizen dies overseas, local authorities are responsible for determining the cause of death and for any possible investigation. State Department officials also do not provide legal advice, represent Americans in court, serve as official interpreter or translator, or pay citizens' legal and medical expenses. They only help crime victims and their families by notifying the next of kin, providing information on local burials or how to return a body to the United States, and assisting with other services such as providing a list of local lawyers who speak English. On February 11th, family and friends gathered at Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove to celebrate Elliot's life. His mom said she wants the world to remember him by paying forward his generosity, saying when you needed help or needed some uplifting with his mischievous sense of humor, he would stop and really connect with people, and he was letting you know he cared. One drop of water is one drop of water. Hundreds of drops of water can change the world. I ask that we remember that and we share that so we can make a difference in this world and in people's lives. Elliot's family have since honored his life by continuing his legacy and dedication to at-risk youth involved in the juvenile justice system. They launched the Elliot Blair Foundation to provide at-risk youth scholarships and resources to those who have lost loved ones in foreign countries. They provide two need-based scholarships in the amount of $5,000 each to attend college or vocational school. To be eligible, they must be current or former wards within the last 10 years of the Orange County court system. If this interests you at all, you can go to the ElliotBlairFoundation.com for more information and to apply. They also collect donations, and you'll find a link on the website to help. But we still have no answers in what really happened to Elliot Blair. I think we can break all the theories in this case down to three: suicide, accident, or murder. I don't think this was a suicide. There were absolutely no signs of any trouble in Elliot's life. He was there celebrating his one-year anniversary. And jumping from 20 to 25 feet off the ground isn't a common way to try to kill yourself. So I think we can take suicide off the table. That leaves us with accident or murder. While I lean towards murder in this case, it could have been an accident. Let's break it down. Elliot takes a shower before bed, gets out, scrolls through Instagram, and hears something outside that makes him open the door without getting dressed. What could he have heard that would make him open the door so suddenly? He might have heard a couple fighting or someone screaming for help. He would be the type of person to immediately try to help. So he opens the door to investigate, starts walking down the hallway, trips, and somehow goes over the walkway to the ground below. The problem with this scenario is that it doesn't explain all his injuries. He could have hit his head when he tripped, knocking him unconscious on the way down, and even hit his head again on the way down. When he tripped, he could have stubbed his toe, explaining that injury, and fell on his knees, explaining those injuries. Being unconscious would explain how he landed without trying to stop his fall. But there still isn't any way to explain 40 skull fractures to the back of his head, especially when he didn't land on the back of his head. So, this brings us to murder. Who would want to murder Elliot Blair? Kimberly thinks it had something to do with getting pulled over earlier in the night. They told police where they were staying. They stood up to the police. And when asked for the bribes, they didn't have enough cash. Talking back to them, flashing his American Public Defender's badge, and not paying what they wanted could have angered the police enough to find him later that night and search for more money. People have definitely been killed for less. The police would know how to find out what room they were staying in, knocked on the door, When Elliot answered, he knew they were in danger, so he quickly went outside and shut the bedroom door behind him to keep his sleeping bride safe. They beat him unconscious and threw him over the walkway. That sounds realistic to me. Or maybe it was more of a crime of opportunity than premeditated by the cops. Maybe someone saw them having fun earlier in the night, spending money on dinner and drinks, followed them back to their hotel, and a similar scenario played out. While I think it's unusual that Kimberly didn't hear anything and wake up, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities, especially if Elliot thought she could be in danger too. He would have tried to stay quiet to keep her safe in the room, because if she woke up and heard him struggling, she'd run and open the door and she could have gotten killed too. I can't say who killed Elliot Blair, but I do think he was murdered on that fateful night. And I think the Mexican authorities want to claim it was an accident because they rely on tourism as a large revenue source in that area. And murder is bad for business. Should you visit Rosarito, Mexico? And if you go, how can you stay safe? There are definitely better and safer places in Mexico to visit if you're planning a trip. But for someone like me, who's just a quick drive away, it can be a fun weekend getaway. Rosarito is a great place to enjoy the beach and sunshine, but unless you're extremely safe and have a tight group of friends with you, I don't recommend going out at night. The main streets of Rosarito are filled with people drinking and walking around, but they're also filled with criminals and people looking for crimes of opportunity. Not only would I not go out at night, I wouldn't drive anywhere at night either, because driving on the streets, even the main streets, can be unsafe if you're pulled over or carjacked. Around every corner, day or night, people are selling drugs. Please don't buy drugs in Mexico. You really don't know what you're buying, and you can't trust that it's not something that will kill you, like fentanyl. And there is a fentanyl crisis in Mexico as well as the US, especially near the borders. Also, don't bring much cash with you. Getting robbed can be pretty common, and getting a shakedown by the police is even more common. But beyond that, don't bring credit cards or bank cards out with you either, because they will take you to the ATM to get more money if you don't have enough cash on you. As a woman, I probably wouldn't go to Rosarito alone right now, especially with so many reports of sexual assault, rapes, and drugging. But since I don't drink or usually go out after dark when I'm traveling alone, I'd probably be safe if I went. According to the U.S. Travel Advisory, Baja California is at Orange Level 3, reconsider travel due to crime and kidnapping. They say transnational criminal organizations compete in the border area to establish narco trafficking and human smuggling routes. Violent crime and gang activity are common. Travelers should remain on highways and avoid remote locations. Of particular concern is the high number of homicides in the non-tourist areas of Tijuana. Most homicides appear to be targeted. However, criminal organization assassinations and territorial disputes can result in bystanders being injured or killed. What does this mean? Well, if you're driving to Rosarito through Tijuana, don't drive at night and don't stop until you get to your destination and stay on the main highway. Although I sometimes disagree with the U.S. travel advisories, I think reconsider travel is warranted right now with the crime wave we've been seeing. And while Rosarito is a nice, close weekend getaway from Los Angeles, there are better places to go. If you decide to drive there, remember to bring your passport. And it should go without saying, but don't transport drugs. Those borders are no joke. It takes no time at all to get into Mexico, and you won't even be stopped normally. But getting back to the United States can take a lot of hours in standstill traffic. While you're in the borderline, people will come up to your car selling anything you can think of, including puppies. Do not buy a puppy at the borderline. It's heartbreaking, but they are usually sick and you'll be stopped at the border and the puppy can be taken away, given back to the person you bought it from, and resold to the next car. Also, there are no bathrooms at the borderline, so remember that when they come by with drinks. I've had to wait 6 to 8 hours before, and holding it that long is impossible, especially if you're buying drinks. There are a few ways to go around the line. But it's Mexico, so it will cost you. You can usually buy a medical pass in Rosarito for around $100, which gets you into the fastest lane and is usually less than an hour across, so sometimes it's worth the money. And some hotels will give you a pass when you stay there, but you have to ask for it. Overall, Rosarito is a fun place to visit for a few days, but use common sense and be very careful. While you should be fine, even the safest of travelers can run into crime and senseless violence there, and you can't look to authorities to help you. Most importantly, no matter where you're traveling, make sure you inform someone about your plans before you go anywhere. Tell someone reliable where you're going and what you'll be doing and when to expect you back. And my number one tip to staying alive on vacation is to pay attention to your gut. If something doesn't feel right, it isn't. Elliot Blair died in the early morning hours of January 14, 2023 at the Los Roques Resort in Rosarito. Mexican authorities say it was just a tragic accident, and his family says it was murder. If you were in Rosarito or at the Los Roques Hotel and have any information, now is the time to speak up. Maybe you heard something or even saw something. You can email the Elliot Blair Foundation at gmail.com with any information you might have. You can also donate to the Elliot Blair Foundation to help his family keep his legacy alive and send an at-risk youth to college by going to theelliotblairfoundation.com. And finally, remember to leave a review and rate this podcast 5 stars if you like the show, or hell, even if you don't. But either way, feel free to let me know what you think. Please follow The Last Trip on Instagram at The Last Trip Crime Pod and subscribe on Patreon to support the show. You'll get extra research, videos, photos, and updates, and even learn more about my personal travels. That's patreon.com/The Last Trip Podcast. I'm Jamie Beebe, bringing you your last trip and signing off until the next one. Thanks for listening.